Record. Welcome, folks, to the Aries Working Group call for the week. This is 17th of March. This is a Linux Foundation meeting, so please mind the Hyperledger. Well, I guess it's also Hyperledger in the Linux Foundation, so please mind the antitrust policy and our Hyperledger code of conduct so that we can be as welcoming as we can and avoid any legal issues with our work. You are welcome to add yourself to the attendees list if you would like. That is the wiki for the agenda is in chat. Anyone new here that has not attended before and would like to introduce themselves? All right. Well, we're glad you're here. Announcements: IW is coming up in just over a month. And the Hyperledger Global Forum is in June. Any other announcements that we should be highlighting? All right, related meetings. I will offer the DIFF-DIDCOM working group. We have been discussing some similar issues as here in the how to tell the difference between messages that come in which format, et cetera. And there's some related PRs in both groups about that. So that's been a really good discussion. Other related meetings that we want to discuss. And James, I'm gonna kick bifold down to just one.
I probably should have said this up in the announcements section, but the call for papers for Hyperledger Global Forum was extended through this Friday. So if you have ideas on things that should be discussed there, or things you think that the broader Hyperledger community should know about, please take the opportunity to submit an idea.
Nathan, I appreciate that because I missed the deadline. So I very much appreciate a couple more days to get it in there. So if you wanted to, if you were like me and a slacker, you have another shot. Other meetings that we want to report on, this is the off week for the implementers call. That will be next week on Thursday.
That's correct. Last week, we had a good presentation and discussion about the proposed ledger freeze process that Evernim has proposed for ND ledgers. And there's a recording posted on the page. I've left last week's link on the page, so you can check out the recording if that's of interest to you. And then we'll be meeting again next week.
Thank you, Steve. Mm-hmm. All right, Stephen Curran usually reports on several meetings. He is not here. Is anyone able to report on those in his absence? I think we might lose him for just a little bit longer and then hopefully he'll be back. He had a conflicting meeting for another effort that showed up and that he had to participate in. So he's been less visible here than usual. All right, releases and work updates. Andrew, is there anything you want to cover for the BC Gov team and related projects?
New developments on the test harness for interacting with mobile agents, where the harness will basically print out a message and instruct you to do something in the mobile agent because it isn't automated.
So this is like the Mechanical Turk driver, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Perfect. Cool. That's a nice addition.
Yeah, I think that's one Daniel Hartman was looking for, potentially.
I mean, better to have it automated, but the nice part is that anyone can fall back to the manual instructions, so that's helpful.
Yeah, maybe one day we can get it automated.
Steps. Yep.
Yeah, but at least we can establish that they work against the same tests. No real announcements with the shared components this week, I don't think. Akapai, there have been several more PRs merged. The most recent, I think, was the issue credential 2.0. Still a bit more work to well, I'll just say it's still settling down a little. I think that's about it for now.
Awesome. Thank you, Andrew. We have George. I don't see Troy. Any updates on Aries Framework Go?
Sorry, I don't have any of my own. No.
Okay, no worries. I'm scanning two lists here simultaneously. If I miss somebody, then please bring that up. The Aries Bifold. Do we have James? We have James.
Yes. This is the off week on the user group call. We're working on getting coordinate mediation, that protocol implemented in Aries Framework JavaScript to be able to utilized in the Aries Bifold context. In progress of getting that moved over to Hyperledger. So should expect that fairly soon. So making good progress.
Awesome. And Timo's, any other JavaScript related news?
The mediation that James just mentioned, we've started work on revocation. So it should be done in a few weeks. And someone else is working on WebSocket transport. So working on a lot, not yet finished.
Good to hear about the work. Other updates on projects that we want to mention. All right, we have one big thing on our agenda today. Let's try to make as much progress as we can on the AIP2 stuff. Credit goes to Stephen Curran for organizing and tagging PRs that are related to the work that actually needs to happen, which is super useful. So that is the main part of our agenda today, is to be able to address as many of those PRs as we can, and ideally get them merged and done. And then we can highlight the work that is remaining so that we can get this stuff done and moved on. Any other adjustments that we need to make before we get going, or topics that we ought to be addressing? I'll mention another brief call out if you are interested. Stephen and I could use some help in hosting this meeting. If you are interested in doing so, then please reach out. I would love to talk with you about that. It's mostly just a coordination effort. You don't have to be an expert in everything, and just helping the calls to run and putting agendas together. So please reach out if you're interested, and I would be happy to include you. Awesome. Okay, so I didn't really pick an order, but I'm trying to hit these in the order that I think we can most easily resolve, which is helpful. At the top, there are two that are related. One opened by Daniel, who is awesome here today, and Stephen, about changing the route coordination to approved. In this particular PR, Stephen mentioned that there's still a bunch of open questions and highlighted that. And Daniel Adam got together and figured, compared a bunch of stuff. One of the things that needed to change was a link rename. And so that makes it hard to compare a diff, but I've gone ahead and dug up a tool that will help highlight the differences between what Stephen has proposed and what Daniel has proposed. Daniel, I didn't have any commentary prepared here. If you would like to talk about some of the changes that we've made.
I can do that real briefly. There's nothing real substantively different, there we go, about the changes. It's mostly just taking some of the questions that were in the RFC and answering them, with some of the answers being informed by the recent implementation in ACPI, as well as just giving a kind of official commentary on saying, we're not going to worry about this with this particular iteration of the coordinate mediation protocol and saying that those should be considered in future iterations. Yeah, I'm not really sure that there's much else to say beyond that. Anything you think I've missed there, Sam?
I think there's a couple of things here. There was some just missing commentary. For example, we had mediate and recipient terms, but there was no text as to what those were for or how they were to be used. And so there's some included text here. And the examples have been updated consistently about that. So there's some updates here around that. This is really just an explaining stuff that was not explained before, but should have been. And then there are examples being provided for lots of these things as well. So that there's actually like an endpoint listed, et cetera. There's a handful of these questions that have been removed. And that's been clarified. There's some clarified information about pagination as well. So really this is stuff that ought to have been there in the beginning and has been cleaned up nicely by Daniel and Adam. The other thing that I'll notice is that Stephen had proposed we move this to accepted status, and that accepted status has changed or is the same in this PR, meaning it also changes it to accepted status. So that's really where the differences are. Any thoughts or questions about this? It's worth noting that as far as terms go, this is in the design, but I don't believe that's actually been implemented in the implementation in ACAPI. So at this point, it's basically operating as in no term mode, meaning if nothing's presented, then everything will happen in a normal way there.
I don't understand why terms would be an array as opposed to a single URL.
So that there can be multiple terms presented.
What does it mean to have multiple terms? Like what if a document one says, you get privilege X, and document two says you don't get privilege X. Now what?
Don't do that. No, that is a good question. And we haven't actually dug deep into this. The intention there was that you could have non-conflicting terms present and you would be allowed to present more than one.
So practical question, is anyone using this?
Not yet. So the other alternative here was to just remove it.
Yeah. So it's just a question. I am not really proposing anything either way.
That's something we debated. Do we just pull it or do we clarify it? And we sort of ended up clarifying it. But there's certainly an argument to be made for pulling this. And should this be needed as a feature, we can add it in a future version.
I don't have a strong opinion either way, but I do think that an array of terms doesn't make sense to me.
I think the goal there was that you could have some assembly of terms. Your point, though, that presents the opportunity for conflict is totally a good one. Any thoughts on this particular adjustment of terms? Should we clarify? Should we make it not an array? Should we eliminate it in this version?
I would say. Mediator writes their own terms, so they only have one set.
They do. Yes. Although the other point there is that they could be referring to some general set of terms. So let's say someone publishes a set of terms that other mediators can agree to. They don't have to publish their own. They could simply point to other terms that are present, and those are the ones that they would abide by.
Well, for example, I could see it very common that I might say I obey the terms of the rules that are established in the United States and the rules that are established in Europe, and I might list those as separate reference documents that I comply with.
That's a good example, but we could also just create combined terms that reference both of those.
Well, this is a URI. So you'd have to do that by creating a URI that then points to both of those documents and then listing that.
Yeah, do you have the transatlantic terms?
Right. So if we did only allow for one and you wanted to combine more than one, you could simply list those human readable terms in the document. The goal for this, I think, is that the user would be say, hey, here are terms. They could click in, you know, in saying you know, proceeding means that you agree to the terms. And then of course they could load those terms up in a browser, for example, and be able to read the terms that were actually there. There's a whole bunch of very valid discussion points that this does not address. For example, can I get a hash link of the terms or something so that I know that they have not been adjusted between when I agreed to them and when I didn't, or which version I agreed to? None of those things are addressed by this implementation.
I just don't think it makes sense to address multiple sets of terms as like a simple Boolean relationship. I think you need to actually specify how they interact or don't interact. And, you know, which is more strict.
So that makes you and Daniel that are arguing for against having them be a list of terms. Is there anyone that's arguing for the list of terms?
Well, let me say this, Sam. I wouldn't necessarily say I'm arguing against it. It just seemed odd to me, but I can understand the thought of wanting to layer things or whatever. But if you're layering things, you know, is the semantic that the individual item zero in the array is overridden by item one in the array? I don't think we're really specifying that. And the larger thing in my mind is just terms and conditions is quite an interesting and deep topic of its own. And I would like not to have the only instance of terms and conditions in all of our RFCs be the one for mediator arrangement. I think there's probably lots of more interesting cases of terms and conditions that we should be generalizing about as well. So, my vote, I think, is not so much have one as it is let's defer the question of terms and conditions and have a serious discussion about it.
Yeah, I think potentially this would belong better at the connection level, for instance. There may be even be a protocol to accept terms explicitly.
Yeah, that's what I'm intuiting, is that there might be a protocol for terms.
Or a VC even.
Yeah, something along those lines.
So to repeat what I believe is the proposal here is that we actually remove it at this level and then hit it in a future discussion at a more deep and in general level that could be used by more protocols than just this.
Yes, that would be my proposal.
Is there anyone concerned that this protocol would, absent terms, would cause a problem? Meaning, if we were to remove it and then, you know, accept that into the AIP, would that create an issue for anyone that's seeking to implement it?
Well, I would just say that if that is a concern, then why isn't it a concern when you issue a credential or when you disclose your data when you're proving something to a verifier?
I was just asking. I think you're right. I was just asking. Okay. I think, Daniel, the consensus is that we should remove the terms and the explanation and then just revisit that in the future, which means that it could probably be added to the future consideration section.
It's me, Daniel, that you're referring to. So I'll say yes.
Yes. Sorry. I need to qualify my Daniels. So Daniel Bloom, yes, I think that's what we're talking about.
Okay.
And so, Andrew, we could defer the thing about terms. I don't think that terms are scoped naturally to a connection. I think that often you might engage in different interactions with people under different terms. And so I'm not sure that applies, but that's for a longer discussion about terms. Yes, I think everything else in here is just a clarification or a better example. Anyone opposed to these other changes besides terms? Is anyone opposed to the status change to accepted from proposed?
Sam, would you just remind me which RFC number this relates to? RFC
this is 211, 0211.
Thank you.
The other thing to notice in the PR is that early on we chose a poor name for this. And so part of what is here is it actually renames the folder it comes in with a redirect from the previous one. That causes Daniel Bloom, that causes the CI to be upset about the difference. And it actually probably has to do with the inspection of the README file, not the fact that the link actually changed. It expects, for example, there to be an implementations table at the end. And that's probably what it's mad about, not about the fact that you did what you did. So we can handle that. Okay. So I will, this sounds like with that change that this is ready to be accepted then, which does clarify a handful of things, which is really useful. And we'll clean it up and simplify it a little bit too. I don't actually believe anyone's implemented terms. And so removing it from this level is the simplest way forward, I believe. Any other commentary on 211?
Sorry, I was a little bit distracted. Did we reach a decision on whether to leave it in for AIP 2.0 or out? And by that, I mean the terms. The two term attributes.
Pull it out.
Did we pull it out? Okay.
Yeah.
Let me just make a note of that. Thank you.
Okay. So, as we go through this, if someone is willing to go in through and just note that we talked about this in the working group meeting and what the decision was as we hit those things out, it would be super useful. This is a duplicate to this one. If we approve Daniel's, this is PR 615, then we'll just close 615, sorry, 617, then we'll just close 615 since they were accomplishing the same thing, but there's more clarity and updates in this one. Okay. The next one marked for a vote here is the status change of problem report from demonstrated to accepted. This is, so it goes from proposed to demonstrated to accepted is the normal progression here. This is just recognizing moving this forward. Any thoughts or comments on this status change?
Well, it's probably overdue, so I would be in favor of it, but I want to put a bookmark that this particular RFC has some rough edges that have long needed to be improved. So at some point in the future, maybe we'll have an update to it, but I think it's right to move it forward.
I would say removing that text about not yet fully harmonized, I mean, it's useful to have there because I know our implementation doesn't quite follow the RFC at the moment. There's a sort of ad hoc standard still.
And that's part of the rough edges I was talking about. I think the core of problem reports is really good and quite useful. But I think there's a bunch of extraneous details that we've never really gotten closure on, like, you know, is there some procedure for registering codes so that we can recognize them more broadly, stuff like that. So, but that's not a reason to vote against it. I think generally speaking, the community has validated with its implementation that this is an accepted mechanism.
Yeah, I agree.
I think, Andrew, that note here might be really useful to keep at least something approximately the same in here. Just as a warning to those that are waiting in here that there is a little bit of variability.
I had a PR to sort of try and harmonize our version with the RFC, but we were worried about breaking compatibility.
Okay. Will you, Andrew, make that comment against this PR talking about this text?
Sure.
Okay. That way we can move it forward and we have, you know, we have something to base it on. Okay, that's that one. Here we have, this is 23, Mark did is required. This is, George submitted this one. George, any commentary on the, this is the did exchange protocol.
Yeah, so, well, because of AIP 2.0, I'm reviewing the implementations and we are looking to upgrade the, we need to update the Aries Framework Go's implementation of Data Exchange. And looking through the RFC, I found what I personally consider ambiguities. So, and this is one of those. So, you know, which fields are included?
Which fields must be included?
So I believe did is one that must be included, basically.
So there's a, some rewording here. Mostly it's focused on the normative word must. This kind of just says it's included, but must makes it that more clear, right?
Yeah.
I hit something. What did I hit? I think I hit the expand thing. There you go. Okay, so so that's there. And then the other change here was you include that the thread decorator must be included for this particular usage of the protocol, and a similar must be included for the did attribute.
Yeah.
Anyone opposed to these changes? In my mind, these are just clarifying what I think it already meant, but being more clear about it. Timo, your hand is up.
Yeah, just a quick clarification. If it says it needs to contain the TIT reference to the ID of the request message, but can a request message have a thread decorator that specifies another thread ID? So it will be different than the ID of the request message?
That is true, which is an error carried forward in the change. A further clarification would be to make this clear. So the update that George made did not really change that language. It was errant from before.
Okay. I'm not understanding the error. Can you restate it?
It says that the thread ID references the ID of the request message. If the request message actually specified its own thread ID that was different from the message ID.
Oh, it would be the parent thread ID is what it's supposed to be, right?
It could be. It just needs No, it's not parent. It just needs to say, it needs to reference the thread ID of the first one and then just link to where it's talks about thread IDs so that you can do the right thing. Because the ID is the implicit one if a thread ID has not been declared. If a thread ID has been declared in the message, then that's the one to be used.
Oh, I see. Yeah, I get it now. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I actually think we should accept George's PR here since he doesn't modify the errant language. And this could use another one to clarify that language. Timo, you noticed, I don't mean to punish the messenger here, but is that a small PR that you'd be willing to submit against this?
Yeah, sure. Fine.
That would be excellent. This is RFC 23. Is anyone opposed to the changes that George has proposed here? I think they are useful normative clarifications.
I think it's out of date. Let me update it real quick.
Okay, I'm gonna hit approve anyway, just so that I mark that.
Okay.
Yes, if it's, so that one is good to, let me write a list of things we need to merge here unless someone beats me to them. So 608 is ready to go. Let me go hit future ones. Okay, we have update the media type. Oh, Timo, sorry, you gave me one 593. Is that in the list today? That is. So let's talk about that one because Timo has requested discussion of this one. Let's make sure we get to it. Okay, so this was opened by Timo. And there's been a little bit of discussion. Steve is happy with it. George is happy with it. Let's briefly bring up the changes. This is the one that Timo, I think you volunteered to do to clarify how to move a JSTLD credential format and clarifying the types of details that need to be included here. Any other discussion on this particular PR? For context, there are the credential exchange formats that allow a variety of formats to go back and forth, not just any credentials. And this simply states what the format ought to be for JSON-LT credentials for consistency.
I think I resolved it with George in the last week. And I think, yeah, we changed it to make all fields required, also in a proposal. Yeah, that's the change. And I think that's ready to go. I don't know, Andrew, if you still had a comment about it.
Yeah, we were just talking about the the proposed credential having all the same required fields as an actual BC, I think, which seems maybe too limiting. I can see why that would be easier in the code because then you only need one data type for both. But things like the issuance date, the party doing the proposing won't necessarily know what that is. Same with the expiration date. And does it say anything about optional, whether the issuer can include additional attributes that aren't specified by the one doing the proposing? Because there may be attributes that the holder can't propose because they don't know what the values will be yet, like if there's a unique ID in there.
So I believe there's so a lot of this is resolved due to with the negotiating negotiation mechanics built into this protocol. So if the holder sends a proposal, the issuer can always reply back with an offer, or the other way around, you know. And that can go on as back and forth can go on as long as they like. I think not in the proposal message, not allowing stuff like issuer and issuance date is actually a bit limiting. It limits some interesting use cases.
Not allowing the issuance date? Where is it not allowed?
No. I thought I heard it is allowed in the, it's actually mandatory in the PR as it is. I just thought I'd heard you say that you had some questions around, you know, why make that, field issuance date, I think, required in the proposal, but maybe I heard wrong.
That's right. In the proposal, because depending on the resolution of the issuance date, they would have no idea.
So I want to change the topic to a different question on Timo's thing, but tell me when you're ready to go. I don't want to distract from this question first. Go.
So but coming back to the issuance date, Andrew, the holder may have their own idea of the issuance date that they would like on the credential.
So do they just propose one and then the issuer comes back with either an offer? Well, I guess they would always have to come back with an offer or a rejection.
I guess because I don't remember the specifics of this protocol state machine. You may be right. When they come back with that offer, if the state machine requires it to, it may come back with the same exact issuance date that the holder proposed.
Okay. I'll have a look at exactly which properties are required.
Is the expectation that if the property is required and I don't care that I just send something like an empty string? Or must I actually propose something for every field even if I don't care?
I think the way it's specified now, you always need to specify something. I initially wrote it that a request should have everything already present, but the proposal could be more flexible, and you could like leave fields out. But George had a strong opinion to not do that and keep in line with the Visa data model. So now we consolidated all the messages, and they all just include all the properties that are required according to the Visa data model. And there's no different language in the RFC about what to do if you don't have the value.
I'm looking at the VC data model, and expiration date, for instance, doesn't seem to be required. It says what the value should be if it is present.
Okay. Is this PR saying it's required, Timo?
No, maybe the wording, it says the properties must align with the verifiable credential data model. It says that this also means all properties required by the data model must be present.
Yep.
So expiration date is not required, but if it's included, it should be in the issued credential.
Okay. It makes sense to me that the issuer has the opportunity to add properties that weren't specified by the proposal, if there is a proposal. I think it really just comes down to which fields are required and whether that's going to be too limiting.
So concretely, looking at the VC data model, obviously context and type are required. The credential subject, which is essentially where you have the claims about n number of credentials, at least one credential subject must be specified. Issuance date is required. And I believe that's it. Proofs is required, but that's the only exception that we're making here for obvious reasons.
Yeah.
So really what this says is that both, the proposal here must align with this data model and according all of their required or not required or default values or anything else.
Yeah.
I can't see if issuance date is, oh, here it is. Credential must have an issuance date property. All right.
Yeah.
But I mean, if we can make an exception for proof, we could probably make an exception for that one.
So the exception for proof has a little bit more grounding. The fact is that you're actually just trying to sign the data, the credential template that is, the issuer is trying to sign the credential template that is being handed to them. Mind you, there's nothing stopping the holder from asking the issuer to attach a proof to a credential that already has a proof as proposed in this PR. But anyway, so that's the reasoning why it makes more sense to make an exception for proof.
Okay, I see.
I think that... The issues that I have with this are not with this PR, but with the VC data model. Given that, though, I think that it would be useful to include an explanation sentence here that indicates that, hey, things like issuance date must be included even if you don't have an opinion because of this requirement. So just make one and put it in there.
What would we call that? Like that new section, maybe guidelines or
even just a sentence right here on the end of the credential thing that just indicates, that just highlights the fact that even if you don't have an opinion, you still have to say if it's required by the VC data model. This is going to be a stumbling block for people that wander into this and assume that they don't need to specify the issuance date, for example.
Does the VC data model require that the value of issuance date be non-null? Because there's a difference between omitting it and including it, but with a value that's null.
Jason doesn't do nulls very well.
If it's present, it has to match the data type. ISO date format.
Yeah, I think that has something to do with the JSON LD semantics, yada yada.
So is there any way, George, in your view, is there any way to say, here's an issuance date, but I don't actually care about it? Because arguing that you want to keep it in is fine for the use cases where you're trying to tell somebody, please sign this. But what about the use cases where you don't have an opinion? There's no way to express, look, here, I'm putting in an issuance date because you required me to, but please ignore it.
The semantic level of this is what bothers me most, right? That's what Daniel's articulating, is that I might have to say I have an opinion about the issuance date, even if I don't. And that's problematic from an issuer perspective, because they may not like the proposed issuance date, which means that Troy's in the chat indicated that it's a required thing, which means that you'd actually have to specify that. And that becomes very problematic when I don't semantically care. If I propose something that happens to be different than the issuer is capable of issuing or willing to issue, now we have a conflict that didn't really need to result simply because I was forced to say what the issuance, what I thought the issuance date should be.
Yeah, there's also, like, if you're looking at the VC data model.
So let's look at this from, let's try to replay this in an example. Flow. The holder makes a proposal, and if they really don't care, let's just, I don't know, maybe personally me, I would just put time, the current time. They would still get back an offer from the issuer with that will have the issuance date and perhaps a different time. So if the holder does not care, they won't even look at the issuance date that was handed back to them in the offer. If they did, then they will take a look at it to see if they match.
What makes you think that they'll get back an offer? Why wouldn't the issuer look at the issuance date that they got in the proposal and say, nope, I'm rejecting this, and just send an error?
Well, this is a proposal, right?
Correct.
This is the format to be used in a proposal, Daniel. So in the flow, not shown here. In the flow, right, there's that you go round and round with proposals and offers until the user accepts an offer, and then they submit the actual credential request detailing what was in the offer.
So here's my point. There's no way for an issuer to tell the difference between a proposal that cares about the issuance date and a proposal that doesn't. And if an issuer receives a proposal and they interpret it as this particular party is committed to an issuance date that I won't support, there's nothing that says that they have to make a counter offer. They could just walk away because they can't distinguish between these two things. I think that's moderately likely. It would be nice if you could distinguish and say, I'm proposing the following things, but I'm not proposing the issuance date. I don't really don't give a hoot what you put in the issuance date. Same for expiration date. But we've kind of eliminated that. And then we depend on the issuer trying really hard to accommodate stuff that looks like invalid data.
I see your point, Daniel.
Seems very strange to me that you could sort of start this conversation, propose an accepted issuance date maybe, and then, you know, hours or days later receive the actual credential that's now backdated.
So I think this is what's happening here. It's like a historical, two historical paths colliding, I guess. How many here have been parsing JSON-LD verifiable credentials for a while? I'm guessing not very many, except for Aries Framework Go. That's what's happening here.
Well, maybe what's happening here is that there's a historical compromise made or understanding made in the JSON-LD community that we're running into for the first time, and we're pointing out the semantical flaws there, which have long been compromised in the JSON-LD community. Not compromise is the wrong word, but they've long reached a understanding in the JSON-LD community about what to do in that particular case.
Not perfectly aligned with the, I guess, the prevailing views of this group.
Honestly, this would make more sense if for the JSON-LD credential, if it just went directly from a credential request to a potential issuance. it's complicated by trying to fit it into this proposal offer request issuance flow.
The flow actually allows, I believe, for the proposal and the offer not even to be part of this. You could actually enter the credential or the exchange directly with the request rather than a propose and an offer. But you still need to dictate what the actual attachment format looks like in that case. So this RFC is still needed, but you're right. You could just eliminate that, but then that almost makes it worse. So I think, George, you're bringing something up here that I think is probably the crux of the issue. The JSON-LD community has reached a consensus on how to handle this that is not recorded in the spec.
Mm.
Right? So either they've decided that the issue date is not required. I should highlight the right thing. The issuance date is not required on the inbound, which deviates from what you're proposing. Or they've decided that it should just consistently be ignored and the issuance date should be always applied by the issuer. But whatever that decision they've made within that community has not been represented in the spec, which means we can't find it without deeper knowledge of that community.
Yeah.
Can I ask a clarification? Which JSON-LD community are we talking about when we're wondering about this question?
Whoever wrote the spec.
Sorry, which spec?
The JSON-LD spec, the verifiable credentials data model. Sorry.
Oh, yeah, but the verifiable credentials data model is an outbound specification, right? So that just means the holder has a credential that has an issuance date in it. Not that it means, that when it was designed, it was for making this kind of proposal request, right?
So perhaps the issue is that we're trying to apply an outbound data model to an inbound flow.
The place where this would manifest is in the HTTP issuer API. They have to have run into it there.
Yeah, but the context there is, that's effectively in a lot of ways an internal API where some system is requesting another system to actually issue that exact credential. And then I think there's, follow-up discussions about what if that's externalized.
But I was actually one of the people that said, don't externalize this because you're not ready to yet. And that's just one of the reasons. Yeah.
So you're right. I think we're probably misapplying an outbound data model to an inbound one. And so this is Troy, I think your point is accurate here in that, it's never come up simply because no one's ever defined what the inbound data model should be for this.
Right.
Except for in these weird cases that don't really apply globally.
Yeah. And some of these are kind of clearly going to be set by the issuer, right? So like issuer and issuance date. And probably expiration date.
I think there's also a risk of over-specifying here because in the VC data model spec, for instance, right now it warns that under the expiration date property, it will probably go away, probably be moving to valid until. So if we kind of enshrine that, it's going to be more difficult to move to.
The issuance date is a little bit funky. Troy pasted the text in the chat, and I was going to point this out myself. The issuance date is not the actual date that issuance as a process takes place. It's the date when the credential is deemed valid by the issuer. So basically, you could issue a credential and say, in 3 weeks, you will be able to prove that you're an employee of this company, but you can't do it today.
It could also be, you got a driver's license 6 months ago.
Yes, it could be in the past, too. That's right.
Right. So that's the short answer
is why there are valid there about, in the future spec, renaming it maybe. but yeah, the semantics is valid from and valid until rather than issuance time.
So the way Timo originally wrote this, to tie this back to the original question, is that these things were optional. And George is arguing that they should not be optional, so you don't have to use a separate data model. And now we're coming back to the issue where not making them optional has semantic problems with it.
And also, by the way, yeah, so there was an initial desire to just have a simple protocol where where the holder simply asks the issuer, hey, can it's basically a sign this attachment protocol, it was basically a signed disattachment protocol, the idea. So the holder would just say, hey, issuer, can you please sign this JSON-LD credential? And the issuer would, you know, just sign it. That was like the spirit of all this. Interesting to see how after, looking at it.
I actually see that's super dangerous, but I understand the idea there.
Yeah, there's a use case for that, but I
kind of.
I don't think it's the majority of the time that the holder knows what they're asking for.
Well, I have a general idea of what I want to have on a driver's license, but I don't know every single field that, you know, the driver's license office wants to stick in my driver's license, nor do I really care. I'd like to say, can you please make sure that my driver's license has my full name and my correct date of birth on it? And everything else I want to say, just put whatever you would normally put.
Yes. So how do we resolve this? Do we go back to the optionality of it?
Yeah, which should be optional. So I mean, what do we want to make optional? We got to restart this conversation all over again. Do we go through the VC data model and start figuring out, start this choosing which ones we want to make optional?
You want to make required and then make everything else optional.
So let's be clear though. On the outbound, they can't violate the VC data model. So that's not a discussion to be had. It's about this inbound request.
Yes, we are perfectly clear, Troy. So yeah. Anyway, coming back to this, on the inbound, are we gonna start discussing with the VC data model in view? Are we gonna go down which attribute by attribute, which we want to make optional, which we don't, or how should we handle this?
Timo, how was it written previous to this?
Pretty flexible, because the scenario I thought of, and it was mainly because, for example, Indy allows it, is you could just propose a schema ID, just send it, and then the issuer will handle everything else if it has your data and it has a valid credential definition ID. So it was pretty flexible, but it really depends on how, because the format was designed to be a bit of a simple format until like we could have like the decentralized div credential manifest. I think we should find some place in the middle, because making everything optional complicates the format a lot, I think.
Yeah, for me, it makes sense that if this credential attribute is included, then that's probably just following the flow that George was talking about, where it's, here's my credential, sign it, please. And, you know, maybe that credential attribute isn't included and you're just specifying some options about the general shape of the credential that you'd like to receive as an alternative.
So Troy just made a note. The JSON-LD frames also allow for empty placeholders. So you just specify this, do the empty struct, which is kind of a null, right? It's like an empty thing there, which means that may be a way of following the same data model, but you specify the empty curly braces. And that means I don't have an opinion. Is that a reasonable compromise, or is that going to be super gnarly to implement in the languages we're thinking of?
What's the benefit over, for example, leaving it out?
It's saying that you want that you want the field, but fill it in.
But a good example there is I would like my eye color to be on my driver's license, but I don't remember whether you wrote it down as, you know, blue, brown, or brown, blue. So just include whatever you have, but I would like it present. That's like the null thing that Daniel was saying earlier.
Yeah. Yeah. And we could use nil, I guess, then, because there's a difference between leaving something out and nil. I think empty brackets are also fine, but it seems like a bit weird syntax to me.
Yeah. I'm just saying that is the actual syntax in JSON-LD frames. So I would say, please don't put nils into things. Nils are nasty.
Yeah, they're handled inconsistently in languages as well.
Null is actually easier to parse as a schema, though. Than, oh, it might be an object, and it has to be an empty object.
Okay, so how do we move forward on this? Is this, Timo, something where you and George take a stab at it, or what's the right, how can we help?
Maybe for next week, I can go through the VC data model, see which fields are what, and see, make a sort initial list, and then we can go over it.
Can we like at least get an idea of the more controversial attributes right now? So I guess these would be issue on state, and is issuer another controversial attribute that people would like optional? I mean, I would like to at least get a general yeah. sense.
I would vote for issuer, issuance date, and expiration date being optional.
Okay. And subject not.
Daniel, are you more or less inclined along the same direction?
Yeah, that's probably what I'd vote for. There's an interesting nuance that I'm thinking about related to credential subject. What if an issuer knows the holder by more than one DID? Like, what if the holder has both a public DID and a private DID, like a pairwise DID? Can you specify the DID of the ID of the credential subject? I guess what I'm wondering is, what's the semantics of leaving out the identifier of the credential subject? Does that say use whatever identifier for me you have, or does it say this is a bearer credential that shouldn't be bound to anybody? But as far as what Sam said, I am aligned with his things. Yes.
So on that note, the ID on the credential subject is optional. At least on the outbound, since we're yes. now going really, really differentiating, you know, between outbound and inbound.
So it's potentially, Daniel, subject could be optional as well, given the complexity you just raised.
And could be an array, by the way. Keep that in mind.
Yeah. So, yeah, I knew that the ID property of a credential subject was optional. That's the very thing that makes it possible to create a bearer credential. What I'm asking is, what's the semantics of leaving it out on the inbound side? Does that mean I want it to be a bearer credential? I want you to leave it out as well? Or does it mean, put it in with a default value? Maybe on credential subject ID, we say, yeah, it's optional, but when you leave it out, that means you're asking the issuer to leave it out too. That was the question I was asking.
Yeah, I think it's an argument for defining what the inbound format is somewhat independently of the VC data model. As in there might be a subject ID field and we specify the semantics of that. But the outbound model is allowed to be somewhat independent, which allows you to adjust for things like expiration date versus valid until.
There's also a compromise here that we should keep in mind in the fact that this is intended to be a temporary format until the other more full format becomes something that we can work with, right?
Which means the other full format would be credential manifest.
Yeah, the credential manifest, yes. So what I mean there okay. is that if we are aware of edge cases that no one really currently has an issue with, we might just acknowledge the edge case and move along. And perhaps, Daniel, there isn't a way in this temporary format that we have to specify one of those options. And maybe that's good enough for the intermediate effort that we're specifying here.
Yeah, I think really the bottom line is Timo and George get a strong vote here and the rest of us can ask questions. But if I don't have an implementation, SICPA does have an implementation that's headed down the BBS plus route. So I do have a little bit of skin in this game, but I don't feel like it's far enough along that it would be ruined by any choice that gets made here. So I'm not really, I don't have that strong of an opinion. I just want to know that the people who are using this regularly feel happy with it. That's all. That's really a way of saying, I think Timo and George should go back and think about it and tell us next week what they decided.
Well, so since Daniel, I think you framed that really, really well. And I appreciate that reminder, certainly to me, about that, which means Timo and George were already happy about the semantics of just making everything required and just requiring that people specify stuff. That doesn't solve all use cases, but if they're actually happy with that temporary implementation, maybe we just proceed with it as is. Timo, George, thoughts?
Agree, approve, merge, go, go, go.
Timo, what do you think?
I was not completely happy with, I think, making it all required, but in the sense of keeping it easy, that's fine with me. But I'm looking at it from like our implementation, having, for example, the issuer issuance date and which was the other expiration date optional, for example. I think that makes it a bit more flexible, and isn't that much that much work to do.
Okay, so it sounds like you want to make a couple of minor adjustments to what we have here before this PR is approved, then.
Yeah, unless everybody else is happy with the current state, and then I'm fine with it also. It's just gotta make compromises.
I think the only issue that I have from just the documentation perspective is that whatever compromises are made ought to be indicated somehow in the text so that someone coming into it can understand the compromises that have been made. So the specific thing that I'm speaking of here is that if we're going to, for expediency, just make everything required, which was the proposal in front of us, then having some text that indicates that and specifies what is to happen. For example, is it expected that the issuer will ignore the issuance date, or is it expected that the issuer will honor it, right? Or is there some seminal value that means I don't care, give me whatever you want, that's like a magic value type of a thing? I think any of those options are fine for an intermediate thing, but I think that some language articulating that would be useful.
Yeah, I agree. We should definitely extend it with like a guidelines on what is expected and why are certain choices made and how you should interpret certain actions.
Okay, so this week it sounds like you're going to either add language or make things about what to do with the required things, or make some changes to make some things optional. And then we can review again next week. Is that the plan?
How about this, Timo? Can you let's shoot Steven a message, see what he thinks, his thoughts? I don't know, not sure, or maybe I don't know. You know, I don't know the entirety of, I don't know the use cases on your side, is all I'm trying to say. So,
yeah. So that's a good one. We'll check with Stefan and see what his requirements are, and then either add some explanations or make some fields optional.
Yeah, let's really try to wrap this up by next week then.
Yeah, I agree.
Can I ask the other question that I had about this pull request?
Yes, I forgot you had one, please.
The title of it says that this is the attachment format for requesting and presenting credentials. And I don't see anything about verifiable presentations anywhere in it. I only see it about credentials. And so I'm wondering if the intention is that when you present a credential, you're truly presenting a credential and you've abandoned the idea of verifiable presentations.
Yeah, that's we could clear it up. I took this, I think, from another format, RFC. I think credential manifest. So I think presenting credentials in this case means like the actual issuance of the credential.
Okay, so yeah.
there's no intention of obviating the need for verifiable presentations. Correct, Timo, right?
Yeah. So that's an unfortunate wording, I think.
Okay, I'm content with that. But the word tripped me up, so maybe we should just rename the
get it fixed.
Yeah. Okay.
Cool. Other questions, comments, discussion on this PR? Excellent. Okay. So we had skipped down to Timo's. We ended up here, I think. CRED proposal filter. This is opened by Stephen Klump.
One quick intermediate thing. That 587 one that's in the PR list should also be AIP 2. DR610. Way at the top. Sorry. DR610.
610. This one.
Yeah. So I have that also in the DIPCOM community, but we'd have to set that as well.
Okay, I've added that to the list so that it's marked. Okay. So this is Stephen Klump's adjustment. Timo, you like the change and there's some discussion here. It looks like you're requesting some additional language. Is that it?
No, this is, I think, unrelated change. Yeah, so but there was a issue I opened, and it was about using one format identifier for all for each format and not for each message. But there's more discussion down, and I think in the end it was just some wording changes. So most of the comments I think aren't relevant anymore.
Okay, so you're happy with it as is then?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm not.
Okay. Is there discussion we can have today, Daniel, to help that, or does
yeah, I think carried so. Out in and I I'm not trying to be a stick in the mud, but my understanding is that we're trying to pick identifiers for formats, and the way that this is written is an identifier for a collection of formats.
Not anymore. It's now back to each one has a unique identifier now again.
Oh, well, if that's true, I had checked this a couple of days ago, but I haven't checked it recently. The last comment I saw was from Stephen Klump saying, okay, I've updated it. Is everybody happy? And at that point it wasn't changed. So I wasn't happy at that point, but if it's changed since then, that's great. That was the essence of it, is it our intention that these identifiers identify individual formats or collections of formats that go together? And I want it to be individual formats. So as long as we're doing that, then I'm happy. It was a great PR otherwise.
Yeah, I think we're back to, I think the issue came from like an implementation perspective. We were looking at it, giving each format message a unique identifier, but they're all grouped, and we can from the message type like know which specific format it is. It was extra complications, but the point you mentioned to be it like just registering a specific format attachment that could be used in other protocols, then it makes sense to not do that.
So I'm trying to line up what Timo you just said with the state of this, and Daniel you said that as of this point you weren't happy with it yet.
Correct. Yeah, that I had seen that comment from Stephen, and I thought after I did that the particular issue I was worried about had not been fixed. Timo's saying it has been since then. So,
but there's no code changes since that comment Stephen made.
Well, let's scroll up carefully. Maybe I was browsing wrong or something. So, stop right there with that first one. George was saying, why did you change the identifier for credential manifests?
And they reverted that, by the way.
Well, but there is no, oh, does this say that this is outdated? Oh, it does. Okay, so that one's been outdated. Okay, good. So let's scroll up to some other ones.
You can look at, I think, the final changes at the top.
The files tab or something?
Yeah.
If you go up here.
Yeah, so that's something I checked about an hour or two ago. At least this PR only appears to be modifying in the related stuff now in its current state.
Oh yeah, I think the change it did is changing the proposal back to what it was in V1. And I think maybe that's something we need to discuss with the schema issuer ID, because I think the point Stefan Klump made is that a holder can't create the same data as that's required in an attachment, because in an offer, because that's specific issuer API in the SDK.
Sorry, I'm a bit confused. So was a field modified, added, removed? What's going on here? I'm not referring to the attachments RFC. I'm referring to the core RFC, the issue credential RFC. Was anything removed or changed there?
No, only in the attachment format, I think.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah, it looks like the only change here was the name of the format itself.
Yeah, so that line, the yellow line there that's got the change, you'll notice that there's an inconsistency between that line and the change above it. In the thing above, it's hlnd/cred abstract. Down below, it's hlnd@cred filter.
This still has issues then.
But it's really, really close. I think the intent is now aligned. It looks like there might just be some housekeeping to check, but this is definitely different than when I last saw it. So erase my concern, but just put a little bookmark that we need to do some cross-checking for consistency, but it looks right.
Okay, will you add a comment to that effect, Daniel?
Yeah.
On this? And that's 607 is the PR.
Okay.
Okay. Good. I wanted to hit this one. Hang on, this one I have filtered, so it's slightly. Here's the media type details. Troy, is that?
Hello.
Any commentary on this?
Sure, if you can just go back to the raw view, it's probably easier to see. So basically what happened is I wrote this text in DIDCOM V2 transition, but it actually was general text that I should have included above as well. And I've also included the CTY property into this text. So basically it's saying the envelope must have the TOIP property, and it must have the CTY property, and the TOIP is set to the type of the envelope and CTY is set to the type of the payload.
Is this still under discussion over in the V2 working group?
There's a sibling PR that has very similar text.
Is there reasons we should not merge this now or in let that conversation resolve, or are you comfortable with how this needs to be merged anyway?
So yeah, I'm comfortable with, I mean, this is the discussion we had last time, so.
Right. We hadn't yet over there had the discussion about the CT or the type, whether it was JWM or something different. We haven't yet had that conversation over there.
Oh yeah, but I think for here, that doesn't matter because it's saying DIDCOM V2 will decide whatever types of matter,
right,
whatever types it wants to do. This one is only saying the must for
V1.
Yeah, with the exception of the envelope, but these are the values from DIDCOM V2, right? So when it says application DIDCOM encrypted plus JSON, that is the type from V2. And that's already in the text below anyways.
Okay, so this sounds good. Is there any objections to merging this particular PR? This is modifying 587, the encryption envelope V2. And this is just aligning and clarifying those things. We had discussed that that RFC previously in a previous meeting.
I like it. Thanks for doing that, Troy.
Any objections? Okay, I have 6-10 down as a merge right after the meeting. So let me do it here.
Yeah, go ahead. So on related topics to this, so two questions or two thoughts come to my head. One is, and this is actually one of the things that we are really interested in, which is, you know, how to decide which encryption to use. I'm not sure if that has been clearly resolved yet. So that's one question. And the second thought is, I'm not seeing any examples here. So I don't know. I'm curious to see what happens if we start showing examples around and people start looking at them and maybe some new thoughts or questions pop up. Much like it did for the PR that Timo and I have been working on.
I think that would certainly be useful. If someone is inclined to create some examples of what this actually looks like, I think that could be really useful for discussion.
So, and back to my first point, I believe right now we have an RFC in V1 that says this is a set of encryptions of JWE. We have several curves there and their respective algorithms, fine. And we have another, we have V2 saying something similar. So now, and also in V1, we have another RFC with a different form of encrypting the JWE. So now my question is, are we gonna, and this is what is not clearly resolved in my head, are we gonna use these MIME types as negotiating parameters in the temporary measure for AIP 2.0? And when I say, what I mean is, are we gonna use these MIME types to negotiate the encryption parameters? That's what I meant. For AIP 2.0, or is that a topic still worth discussing on its own, or what? Or is it just me that is not completely clear how the actual mechanics of this is going to work?
I think there's two discussions there. One is what the AIP, DIDCOM envelope, DIDCOM V2 envelope optional target plans to do. And the other one is what DIDCOM V2 intends to do as far as that. I believe we've made some progress on clarity, but I stopped short of saying that it's perfectly clear and well documented. I had a diagram that I was worked on and showed some last week, and this week in the DIDCOM meeting, you know, talking about the, you know, how to handle that. Or no, we didn't actually get to that in the DIDCOM meeting, but how to handle the various forms of that. It's my intention to turn that into text, but I have not done so yet. So I don't believe we're all the way there yet, George. I'm not satisfied, at least, that is perfectly clear. But there's some decisions about how that could be done in the optional target for AIP2 that don't need to necessarily be locked to what's happening in DIDCOM V2 based on that. So we do need clarity in the MIME types, et cetera, to tell when that, when one of those envelope types is being requested. But as far as negotiating the actual encryption, I don't know that needs agreement outside of the people that intend to implement that optional target. Sorry, that was really wordy.
Okay, so are you going to lead that discussion on the next call, or what do we need to do to make that happen?
So I don't have a valid opinion as it relates to AIP, the AIP2 optional target and negotiating encryption. We do need to solve that in DIDCOM V2 and make sure that that's super clear. So my energies will be directed that direction. If you would like to volunteer to lead that discussion and propose some solutions there, then on this next call for the resolution here, that would be useful.
On the next Aries B call.
Yes.
Oh.
If you feel like there's things that aren't yet resolved and need to be, then highlighting those and possibly presenting solutions would move that forward. I don't know that I have a valid opinion in this, and so me leading the discussion is not useful.
Okay. I guess. And yeah, I'm okay. I guess, yes, we will move forward with this. Who, Andrew, are you the go-to person on the ECAPI side for this topic?
For AIP 2.0 in general?
For the encryption.
The JWE envelope.
We'll
produce the interoperability with the Go team.
I'm looking at adding the new key types and potentially support for that encryption in ASCAR now.
So is that a yes for you're the yes. go-to with regard from the point of view of ECAPI, or
that's a yes? I would say so.
Okay.
Me or Steven?
All right. Yeah, okay. Okie dokie. Fine.
Actually, I was going to ask whether there are actually any test vectors we can use for the encryption envelope, either plain ECDH1PU or something DIDCOM 2 specific.
Okay. I think I'll bring Baja in for this, but anyway. All right. So thank you, Andrew. And Sam, yes, we'll try to push this forward, and we will be in touch with the ECAPI team. That would be Stephen and Andrew, I guess.
Awesome. I appreciate that. Okay, we have just a few minutes left. This is 606, opened by Daniel. Make the plain text MIME type more clear by default. This changes it to be have the flavor on here instead of just application JSON. This is a nice change. Any conversation or anyone objected to merging this?
That was like six Nathans. That's a long wait there.
Yes. So that one's out of date with base, but I'll put it on my list of ones to merge when we clean that up. Let me head back to the next one. There's a couple of other quick ones I think we can go over. I'm like too deep in here. Come on. So here's 454 tweaks. This is also submitted by Stephen Klump. And this has, George, you mentioned also fixing proposal attached. Does that need to happen before this gets merged?
I am strongly in favor of that. Yes, because since this, that's the reason, that's the motivation behind this PR. It's just, you know, let's make things plural. So, and they missed that one. And we're just following the best practices recommended in an RFC. I forgot which one. I think it's 0074.
Right. So this was requested 8 days ago. Nothing's happened.
Yeah, okay. So I guess like if they do not update that, we can ping them, of course. Let me do that right now in the PR. If not, then I don't know. I'll just copy his stuff and add the tweak I want in a new PR. And would that work?
That will work.
Okay. Yep.
Okay. And that's that one. We talked about that one. I hit the wrong thing. And we're about out of time. I should probably call it there before we dive into another one. I appreciate the working session with everyone to try and figure these things out. And we've got a number of things merged, which is very helpful. So please take a look at anything here that's related. Grateful for your help today.
Hey, we may have set a record for the number of PRs we approved in one meeting.
Certainly recently. We are doing much better than we have recently. So I appreciate everyone's help here. I hope your week is a great one. And anytime you can spend helping to move these things along, we can get to AIP2 faster. We're so close, I can start to smell it here.
smell it. Okay. All right.
It's cooking. It's almost done.
Cooking. All right. That's it. Coming out of the oven. Sounds good.
Thanks all.
Bye.
Cheers.